When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
On the latest episode of BCC The Other Side, Bryce shares a Wet Hot Alien Summer 2 edition of Bryce's Secret Stash as we review videos of UFOs and the mysterious Fresno Nightcrawlers. To subscribe to The Other Side, go to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club.
Well, hello, everybody. Wet Hot Alien Summer 2 Summer Abduction continues here on Bigfoot Collectors Club, the show where we talk to amazing guests about their personal paranormal history and share stories of high strangeness. I am your host, Michael McMillan. With me always is your other host,
Bryce Johnson.
And our super producer,
Riley Bray. I'm not even going to try to top that one, Bryce. That was
good. Okay. Nice. Nice.
Yeah, that was good.
Whoa.
That was good.
Too deep for man. The beach.
Too deep.
So it's Wet Hot Alien Summer 2 Summer Abduction. All summer long, we're going to be doing stories of high strangeness of the UFO, UAP, and alien variety.
Yes.
Here on the main feed and over on the other side, where you can subscribe and get 3 to 5 bonus episodes every month by going to patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club. And by doing so, you will not only be able to listen to the parallel dimension to the Bigfoot Collectors Club, you will be supporting the very show you are listening to right now. And remember, guys, we are trying to get to 1,000 patrons by the end of the summer so that Bryce will ride a jet ski naked.
That doesn't mean there will be a jet ski special
because for that we need 1,000 five-star reviews, but there might just be we might just rent a jet ski for Bryce to ride naked in a pond that we film and only put on the Patreon.
Right.
With it's no special.
Pond. Yeah.
I'm going to go balls out on a jet ski that's not going to be the jet ski special.
No.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
No, it is. Well, it's depends. Codependent. It's a codependent sort of situation.
Oh, and for the love of Bigfoot.
As far as the Patreon goes, we are just under halfway there as of this recording. So tell your friends. And there are a couple other ways to support the show. Drop us a few bucks on buymeacoffee.com if you don't want extra content. The link to which you can find on our link tree under our bio on Instagram and Twitter. And finally, you can support
the show. I love that. It's like, I'll tip you guys to shut up. That's what I'll do.
Yeah, great.
We'll take it. We're not above that.
No. We will tuck Bryce's dick back into his swim trunks if you give us any way you want to go, guys. We will go, right? But you can, as I said, support the show for free by going to Apple Podcasts and giving us a 5-star review. If we get 1,000 5-star reviews by the end of the summer, we will record the full BCC jet ski special, where hopefully Bryce will be riding a jet ski naked in a video over on the other side. Now, here's an example of a 5-star review. I'm going to have Bryce read this one.
Oh, my God. Oh, man. I'm looking for it.
I texted it to you earlier today. Oh, now, get into this one.
You texted
one,
it or emailed it?
No, I screen grabbed a 5-star review. I said to read to tonight
right
on the show,
right,
and you thumbs
right
up it.
Yeah. Okay, good. All right, here we go. Love it. This is the only podcast I listen to that I keep up to date on. They do an amazing job presenting lots of information on all things paranormal in a fun, comedic, and easily digestible way. This podcast has kept me company on several car rides. Keep it up. Can't wait for the jet ski special. And that was submitted by Kira JK.
Thank you, Kira. Fantastic, Kira. Kira,
wonderful
listen,
review.
Wonderful review. Thanks for the jet ski shout out. And listen, Kira, and the rest of y'all, I'm going to remind you that dark forces are rising this summer to not only spoil the jet ski special, but to hurt our feelings as well. We have to defeat this 4.8 average and the one-star reviews that are coming in, like this one. Are you guys ready for this?
Yeah, I've been reading them. Yeah, I kind of enjoy them.
They're kind of fun.
Sad podcast. One star. By Boxers. By Boxers 30. There is no room on my podcast list for the vulgar language and far left-leaning political views. Stick to the subject and stop the sophomoric attempt at humor, they vulgarity, comma, and that's where it ends. Guys, are you going to let these trolls ruin your wet, hot alien summer to summer abduction?
Look, honest assessment. I mean,
sophomoric vulgarity. That's good.
Yeah. Guys. Nice. Are you gonna let these first order stormtroopers ruin our good time? Don't let these wet blankets like Boxers 30, I'm gonna call them Boxers 2D, ruin our good time. Get out there and give us a 5-star review. I'm sick of
probably
this
not
shit.
Even hearing his own shout out.
I don't want to look at these Apple Podcast reviews and feel bad about myself. Also, that was kind of a 5-star review in its own right,
yeah,
to be
know.
Honest.
That kind of makes me feel good about myself a little bit, I gotta say. It's fun.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, okay. Enough clubhouse business. Let's bring in our amazing guest. This week's guest is in New York City. Talk about left-leaning liberal. He's a New York City-based journalist, author, and researcher of The Weird, who currently appears on Travel Channel's Paranormal Caught on Camera and is host of Den of Geeks Paranormal Pop Culture Hour, of which the BCC has been a guest. Club Scouts of all timelines, please welcome Aaron Sagers!
Woo! Woo! Hey, guys. I specifically showed up for the sophomoric vulgarity. I am here for it.
Good. You're in the right spot then. How are you, Aaron?
How are you?
I'm great. I mean, I don't know whether I'm rooting for you to reach your naked jet ski operation or not. I just might want to buy you a coffee instead.
That's fair. Enough. We'll take
reasonable
it.
Reasonable assessment.
And look, I don't want to say it up front, but I mean, who knows what's going to be obscured when that jet ski is going? It's either flapping in the wind or there are waves just blocking everything, and then we'll get a lot of complaints. Yeah. You know what I mean?
You got to pay to play. We'll have to see.
Yeah, pay to find out.
Yeah. You guys, you are on the bleeding edge of content creation. And it might actually involve bleeding edges with this jet ski stunt.
Yeah, some wind chapped water splash bleeding edges. Aaron, you are involved with Bryce's favorite television show of all time.
Yeah, fucking love that show.
I feel bad that he has to say that since he's also on a television show.
I'm telling you, I love Paranormal Caught on Camera. I eat it up. I mean, first of all, my go-to TV is always Paranormal. I think we were talking about this before we got on air, and that's my numero uno. And then followed by that, I like a good true crime. But yeah, I love Paranormal Caught on Camera. You guys do a fantastic job.
Thank you. Yeah, no, it's a hell of a lot of fun to do. And what I really like about it is, in addition to a bunch of white guys with beards, you don't see enough of that in the paranormal. What I really like about it is that we actually do have some diversity out there. We have, and we cover the globe with phenomena. Like, we're talking about stuff from across the entire freaking world. And I love that because I will say that we're kind of unique in that way. There's not one any other show really doing that, that is talking about not just ghosts or aliens or Bigfoot, you know, the trinity of weird, mm-hmm. but also, you know, the Aswang in the Philippines, or you know, a Russian domovoy, yeah. or
Russian floating, you know, girls, everything. Russian levitating girls.
Bryce.
Oh, yeah. That yeah. was a weird one.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah. Well, okay. So here's what I want to know, Aaron. Now, are you part of the committee that's like, ooh, let's put this on the show? Because I've watched the show. They're all amazing videos, but I get a little, even me with the Bigfoot podcast, I get a little skeptical, like, where are they getting these from? Where are you guys getting these videos from?
Well, I'll say first up, I would not say they are all great videos, but there's, you know, there's a range in quality. And look, you know, I think that we know that. And sort of, I am not part of the committee that selects the videos. We have a great team of researchers who are scouring the internets, mm-hmm, either mm-hmm. looking at news stories or looking at just like phenomena or videos that pop up across social media, and they will go out there and they will collect those videos and then bring them to us. Now, nobody tells us what to say. Nobody says you have to say that this is legit and real. Obviously, look, the conceit is, it's a paranormal show. It's on a network that and a streaming platform that leans heavily into the paranormal. So, of course, they don't want us to be, you know, pooping all over everything that's out there. But what we do, and I like this, is that you can pose a lot of questions. You can pose a lot, like, and with me, it's like, well, if I was in this position and I saw something like this, or if this is real, or... You're kind of like posing these hypotheticals, but it also allows us to get into the meat and potatoes of theory and folklore. And that way, I think that we're kind of expanding the conversation a little bit. But look, I mean, there's some videos that I see that I'm like, okay, I don't buy into this. But I'm like, well, if I was there and I saw this thing, you know, what would I think? What would my reaction be? And it also kind of presents this interesting question of, we say, well, maybe that's too good to be true, but isn't that exactly what we're looking for? Aren't we exactly looking for a great piece of footage of some phenomena that is very crisp and clear, and we have a good, nice framing of it, and it lasts for an extended period? That's what we're looking for.
Yeah.
And yet, if we get that, we're going to be like, meh, it's too good to be true. But then when it's grainy and cuts out and it's slightly out of frame, we're like, oh, well, if only it was clear. So it's, in a way, can we win in this situation?
Sword. Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, let me ask you, do you have a favorite video? How many seasons are you guys into now? You're like on season 4, I believe, or is that right?
Yeah, that's right. We're at the tail end of season 4. We just filmed the season 4 finale last week.
Love it.
And so hopefully we'll keep on trucking. I know that it's well received on the network. People seem to like it.
Oh yeah, you guys will be like Ridiculousness in America's Funniest Home Videos. You got legs, man. You got paranormal legs under you. So
that's what we need is America's Funniest Paranormal Videos, where there's just ghosts driving golf balls in the nuts of your grandfather.
I want to sign you up for that show.
Like ghosts slipping on a slip and slide and falling on their tailbone.
I would watch that show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just, lots of Bigfoot slipping in on the ice or something.
Yeah. We got some Loch Ness monsters dancing at a wedding, and then grandma's bloomers fall off, and, you know.
No. This show's already perfect. We don't need that. So what about a favorite video, Aaron? Is there one that you love the most that you really wasn't on your radar before had done the show?
Well, yeah. So occasionally we'll get some oldies but goodies with those videos, and I'm sure you've seen them. I like those, but I don't know. I'm here for the weird shit. Like, the weirder the better, really. Because look, I like anything that is ghosty. Sure, I like any kind of cryptid videos, but when it gets to something that looks like a troll or that freaking Dobby looking thing, I'm like, when it you gets mean that
the Dobby walking down the driveway in the ringer cam or the night. Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, it was. So I like those weirder things because I actually think that that's that kind of reflects my personal, evolution with the paranormal. Because I'm kind of at that point where I am here for, as you guys say, the high strangeness, the truly weird. I think that we're kind of all reaching this point, all of us that have been in the paranormal for a long time, where we're thinking it's so much bigger and weirder than perhaps we initially thought of or theorized about. It's like John Keel level of weirdness.
Aaron, where do you fall in the category of the Fresno Nightcrawlers? Because we just reviewed some of those videos last week on our Patreon, and Bryce started it as a campfire story and then was like, oh, I don't know if I believe in this. We've had L-Files stories about them. Have you watched any of those recently? Do you have an opinion on the Fresno Nightcrawlers? And if not, and need a refresher, please allow us to refresh your memory.
No, I do know those, and there's something that I don't know if I can talk about yet in relation to this show.
Yes, you can.
But
give us an exclusive.
Michael gives you permission.
Green light. Yeah.
Michael says it's cool. Okay. Yeah. Well, this is what I'll say is I think we've seen them on Paranormal Caught on Camera before. And, you know, it's a topic that I think people like to revisit. So who knows? But with that said, they fit within that realm of weirdness that I quite like, because I don't know what I think. If this is some sort of interdimensional thing that's popping through and passing on, like I don't think that they seem to, based on what I understand, they're not posing any threat to people. They're just kind of showing up and doing their thing.
Would you refresh our listeners' memories for those of our listeners that aren't on the other side and may haven't heard of these guys in a while? What are the Fresno Nightcrawlers? Just to freshen everybody up.
Well, and so you're putting me on the spot. So I'm digging into my mental research. But these are these kind of, they don't really have much of a torso, but they to be all legs. And they were caught on footage several years ago. I think there was the famous footage about seven years ago was the big footage.
And we don't know off the top of our head either, so don't worry.
Well, I just did this. I'll help you. The first one was in Fresno, and I think you're right, somewhere between 8 to 10 years ago. And then there was another one that popped up in Yosemite. And those are the two big ones.
Yeah, and they have these long bodies, small heads, and they're kind of like, what I like about it is there's sort of a recent addition to the paranormal lexicon, and are they new to us? And this is where I love to like kind of puzzle it out. Are they new phenomena, or have they been around for a very long time and have remained largely undetected? And there are some, and again, I want to tread carefully here, but I know that there was one that was captured, or a footage of one that was captured near, not captured. And
I thought you meant in a net.
Yeah. Yeah. No, they've not been netted yet, but these entities with long legs and a small kind of torso or small head, there was one that was captured on camera, and it was near to where an earthquake had recently happened. And the one that I'm thinking of, it kind of sent me down this this rabbit hole of thinking about like hollow earth concepts and Shambhala, which the Buddhists kind of talked about, and even the ancient Greeks had their own version of a hollow earth, except they thought of it more as the underworld. And the Celts believed that within the earth there were monsters that dwelled. And I'm someone that when I look at this, at legends across the globe, when you see certain repetitions, certain themes, I'm like, well, okay, it's easy enough to dismiss it, but maybe there's something really freaking weird there that could have some sort of basis in reality, and maybe the Nightcrawlers are part of that.
Let me. I was kind of talking about this with my younger brother who's in town, and we were kind of having a conversation about when you mention like a hollow earth or something underneath the earth's crust, it almost makes me think, you know, us as individuals, we have our subconscious, and together as a collective society, we have what Carl Jung phrased as the collective unconscious. Right. And he sort of, you know, proposed this idea that perhaps it's our collective unconscious that's manifesting these strange, you know, circular lights in the sky, these UFOs, these saucers, and that they sort of represented the completed circle, representing a completed version of ourselves. We long to be whole. And it was our collective unconscious that created these UFOs. And I've often thought, you know, I believe plants are sentient, you know, and I believe, you know, maybe even the earth is sort of an organic, possibly conscious type system, you know, sort of the Gaia principle, if you will. I've heard people mm-hmm. coin it. And perhaps the earth has its own sort of subconscious, its under realm, its underbelly, and perhaps that stuff can manifest itself in strange ways above the earth, like on the ground after earthquakes and near rivers and stuff. I don't know. What do you think about all that stuff?
Well, so my background is as a journalist, and I still work as a journalist, and I started very much with the, you know, the facts and data and everything. But as you continue on as a journalist and you get out there and you start interviewing people, your perceptions start to expand, and what you find allowable expands. It's no longer just data and facts and theories. And within that, I guess to expand, like, you know, I began sort of within the paranormal thinking a lot about ghosts, and ghosts are this and ghosts are that, or Bigfoot is this, aliens are that. And I would silo all these things. But as I've kind of moved through my own philosophies and read more,
your evolution, as you used before, evolution, and I love that word. Yes.
And so to tie that to what you're saying, yeah, I like that. I am here for that, because I do think that I'm very much about nature and nature spirits and elementals, because forests are teeming with life. It's a giant organism. Mm-hmm. The earth is a giant organism. So it must have an accompanying energy to it. I think that plays into it. I think the human quotient of the more we think about something, the more potential there is that we could manifest it. That, yes. That, as you know, that those circles in the sky, they could potentially be our own manifestations. And I even think that, look, I hate to bring up like Slender Man, but honestly, like even Slender Man, even if it was just created from, you know, whole cloth as a story, a creepypasta story, which it was, but if enough people start focusing their energies on like an entity, it essentially becomes like a digital tulpa. It's a thought form where we could be essentially bringing these things into existence. Do I know for certain? No, of course not. Do I think there's potential? Sure. And at this point, I'm kind of like not automatically dismissing anything, because we don't know what the hell is going on entirely. We're just operating off of theories.
Okay. Yeah. I like this, because we've dug into this on the show before, but I'm saying, like, why is it limited to horror creepypasta? Why can't, if we all believe in Batman be real? Why can't Superman or Spider-Man be real? These are better ideas, right? And I guess we do have some like people who are dressing up in costumes and fighting as sort of like Kick-Ass level vigilantes. But maybe this made me think that, like, hey, maybe the Chicago Mothman isn't actually the Mothman of West Virginia come back. Maybe it's a tulpa of Batman jumping around the skyscrapers of Chicago, because Gotham City, even though it's named after New York is very much like Chicago in the Batman comic books. I'm just saying. Do we limit it to the cryptids that we create? Why can't fucking, you know, Wonder Woman be a tulpa and show up? You know what I mean?
If it is Batman, then it's a Batman that definitely goes down. That's what I'm saying.
Well,
reference timely the Twitter thing.
My theory on this, Michael, would be that you can't fool belief, right? So it's like we know Batman on a deep subconscious level is a made up character. It comes from comics. Now, when we're seeing that Slenderman, there's a part of our psyche that truly believes, right? That for some people, right? And that's total magic.
So Batman as like a viral story.
Yes.
So people weren't
really sure where it came from.
So what you're saying, Bryce, is that we need to create the superheroes as viral stories online, and then we will have superheroes.
Yes, but that's exactly right.
But there's the element of with something like, okay, so I agree that weaving the story, being part of the fabric of the story and the storytelling matters. But I also think that when it comes to Slenderman or certain types of imagery, the reason Slenderman as a creation works so well is it taps into a long-standing character clad in black that we've had throughout millennia, whether it is the Men in Black, whether it's the Grim Reaper, whatever, you know, Death riding in
it's
a,
archetypal,
you know, a cloak. So it's an archetype. Yeah. So it's within that, there was already an element that was already that existed within that collective unconscious, you know? So right. Batman exists, as Bryce said, it exists as a fictional pop culture creation. We are aware of it.
Yeah. I don't know, because I'm not punching holes in this theory. I'm trying to support it. I'm just trying to create Batman right now. So that's all I'm saying. But like Batman is also called the Dark Knight, and like this image of the Black Knight, the Dark Knight clad in armor, or the Knight in shining armor, which is Superman maybe, you know, or Captain America carrying the shield, which might be the shield of a knight in shining armor as well. Like, I'm just saying that, like, superheroes are possible, and maybe, like, we need to start thinking more about the good guys in this culture instead of the bad guys, and maybe we'll start seeing some more good guys showing up in cool ways instead of creepy shit.
Go ahead, Aaron.
I was just going to say, what the closest that I can think of that comes to this is sightings of Santa Claus, and there are a lot of documented like people that have gone on record in even as adults, both as children and then some adults, who claim that they have had Santa Claus sightings. And what's interesting, I know Lloyd Auerbach talked about it, and there was another journalist that I forget his name, but he kind of went into this as well at one point. And this was like even a area of expertise for him, collecting these sightings. So I'm sorry that I don't remember his name right now. Stephen Wagner was the guy. And now at first it's like, okay, cool. Maybe that'd be nice to see Santa, except there was this darker element to it as well. Some people saw a Santa that was very calming and it was a happy presence. Other people felt that it arrived with this malevolence. And my thought goes to, what if an entity, whether it's an alien, whether it's something else, what if an entity is popping on through? Maybe it's paying a visit and you wake or whatever, and it's like, oh shit, they caught me. I need to present myself in a non-threatening, familiar form. Well, they go into the mind. They go into the mind of a child or of a person, and okay, go through the files. What's non-threatening? What's a friendly face figure for them to recognize? Oh, this guy's Santa. Well, in our minds, Santa is so fully formed, so fully developed. We know where he lives. We know about his wife. We know who he hangs out with, what his job is. And, you know, we
he's
take our
married,
kids to go
therefore
see him.
Totally trustworthy.
But, Right. Mm-hmm. Totally. So like, okay, pluck that out of the brain of this human and present yourself in that form. Yeah. Hey, I'm Santa. I'm your friendly Santa Claus. You don't need to worry about me. And instead, it's a total ruse. I mean,
that's just creepy.
Whoa. I love that.
I know.
Also, yeah. every little kid knows Santa is scary as fuck. Otherwise, they wouldn't scream and cry and try to get off his lap when they visit him in the department store. But we no, this fascinates me. And we did talk about this on episode 50 of the show with Betsy Sodaro when we covered Santa Claus. And we did a few like, we saw Santa Claus stories, yeah. You know. It is wild. Well, we're skating right past your personal paranormal history, but I feel that this all ties into it about how you got into all this stuff as a journalist and where your interest in this subject began. And Bryce, it sounds like you wanted to ask a question before we get into that, but I feel like we're already there.
Yeah, well, you know, I was just going to add that, you know, who's to say with all this, you know, superhero stuff that's uber popular right now, that it's not creating some sort of foundational structure for a belief that might come down the road. So that in, let's say 20, 30 years from now, people might start developing what we know as sort of these superpowers. You know what I mean?
Well, Grant Morrison is
how they might show up.
Yeah. You know? Grant Morrison has said is that they're crawling their way out of the two dimensional realm from the comic book page into the three dimensional realm through the movie screens. And that soon we will have superpowers. So they it might be happening in a more gradual way, but Aaron, any comments on that? And if not, where did you get into all this stuff?
My comment on it is it scares me to death because, look, I'm a comic book nerd, and on one hand, sure, it seems like it would be cool to have Spider-Man or Captain America, which, you know, obviously it's debatable how superpowered Captain America is, but that would be great, but we're just as likely to get, I don't know, The Boys, you know, or Invincible, or I'm trying to, you know,
the authority.
Yeah.
Like, well, and so, also Batman on the surface and Superman and Spider-Man for that matter on the surface are all inherently creepy, you know, like they are all creepy, you know, a guy's based off a spider totem. Batman is sort of a nihilist and won't kill you, but will break every bone in your body. And goes around saying, I am the night. You know what I mean? That's scary. Superman is an alien from another planet. And Captain America could easily be a fascist. We don't know. Although he's in the comics, he's obviously not. But all these concepts are super inherently creepy on the surface.
Yeah. Or the Spider-Man will just shoot webs out of his ass.
That'd be
right.
Cool. That'd be
I don't want to be saved by.
Well, he'll have a great OnlyFans. I will say that.
Aaron, how did you first get into all this stuff? The strange, the paranormal. What is your personal paranormal history?
Well, I guess the backstory is kind of the comic book talk feeds into it, because when I was a kid, like, it wasn't like I was a comic book nerd or a paranormal nerd. I was an everything nerd. I was reading my science fiction and horror and watching The Twilight Zone, but at the same time reading scary stories, reading the Time Life Mysteries of the Unexplained, and watching In Search Of, while also watching Star Trek. So everything tied in together for me. And so that's kind of what steeped the early thing. And like any good nerd and then later journalist, it was about cataloging all of these details and stories. And it just kind of like, I created a library, I guess a mind palace of all of these tales and phenomena, and just kept adding to it and adding to it. Mm. Some weird things did happen as a kid in my house, but honestly, I didn't talk about that for a long time. I certainly didn't talk about it professionally. It was not really part of my origin story publicly. I kind of skipped forward to always being interested in these things, being a journalist, And right around 2004, I was a young editor at a newspaper. And when this new crop of reality shows came about, I was like, well, I know about these paranormal reality shows. I knew about these phenomena. I was into it. And I looked at shows like Ghost Hunters, and I saw that essentially they were tapping into something that made Ghostbusters so popular, insofar as there's a team ethic, they're using gadgets, hell, they have costumes, they're right, ready to believe you, you know, and like they kind of pulled from that blue collar ethic almost, and brought it to reality. And from there, I wrote about it, and I got a little bit of attention for that. I went on an exploration of a haunted location, Eastern State Penitentiary in Philadelphia. And I had kind of my first big boy experience, which was I'm walking along alone in this amazing, hauntingly gorgeous structure. And I pass by this cell block and I look in and I see what we would call a shadow figure pacing back and forth.
Man,
there was a barrier, so I couldn't entirely step into the cell, but I'm looking at this thing, and even though it was such a new phenomena for me, there was something so deeply familiar and almost recognizable about it. If you saw Batman out in the wild, you would automatically know it's Batman. Probably not in the wild, but in Gotham, Chicago. So I see this figure pacing back and forth, and I'm compelled to communicate. So like a crazy person, I look around, make certain, you know, that no one's watching me, make certain that okay, maybe I'm just talking to myself here, but okay, hey, if there's something in there, come closer. Pacing back and forth. And this figure, this, you know, inky, shadowy figure just stops. And then it rushes me. And my entire field of vision went black. And I leap back and I let out a string of selected profanities. And when I kind of could refocus, this thing was back to pacing back and forth in the back of this cell. And it was like a paradigm shift, because suddenly I'm like, okay, this is now going to be woven into my profession somehow. And it's not like I walked away from there saying I automatically believe all this stuff, because I didn't. I exist somewhere in the middle of the spectrum between diehard believer and cynic. I'm neither one of those things. I'm skeptical. I'm constantly questioning. And even that experience, something like 15 years later, I'm constantly thinking, what did I miss? What did I not account for? It's still a riddle I like to play over in my head. But I do believe there's something going on out there. I just don't always know entirely what it is. But that kind of shifted things. And then that launched me on a path where I started talking about what I call paranormal pop culture, and how entertainment influences belief, belief influences entertainment, and looking how throughout history we see certain trends within pop culture that are aligning with where we are spiritually, belief-wise, all of that. So that's a long-winded response, but that was an experience that altered me.
That's incredible. It's hard not to think of those as you were saying it and mentioning Ghostbusters before. So where are you from originally? And then after you got whacked, that's the one that got me right there in the cell, pacing back and forth. That's incredible, man.
Did you have any residual experience after that?
Did you get slimed is what Michael
said. Yeah. Did you go home and have weird dreams, or were you did an alien symbiote suddenly possess you and now you're Venom? Did you carry any of that with you, or did it seem to go away then and there after that experience?
No, rather, as I've kind of gone on and talked to a lot of people and talked to people that I trust in this world, this field or community, I've kind of uncovered more things from my past that kind of align with things. I don't like to say that I grew up in a haunted house, and I'm certainly not a psychic. I'm not a sensitive. I'm not a medium. But I will say that I've had weird stuff happen that I can't always explain.
Right.
And the way I kind of go with it is you sort of tune in, you have intuition. I think even the job that I have, the journalistic basis, it involves curiosity, involves talking to people, involves getting a story out of people and learning about them. That all plays into it because I have a pretty good read on people. I have a pretty good intuition about situations. But that didn't answer your question. Like, Michael, no, I didn't come home and like, I wasn't like suddenly, I didn't come online. I didn't have the paranormal equivalent of a radioactive spider bite. I was like, I went back to life. But what I did find is that if you go to enough of these locations, you do sometimes tune the dial in, you tune into the radio station a little bit more for at least a little bit of time. So then you pick up on more things that are happening around you. And I don't know if it's like, you're just in the mindset of looking for that thing or questioning about that thing. And you start noticing it a little bit more at home. It's not all the time. It's just like, you know, maybe there's a beat when you come home and something weird happens. Does that, does that make sense?
It does. Sure. No, thank you. Yeah. It's almost like, I think what you're saying makes sense. If you're going to go into one of these places, like, you know, that penitentiary, I think you said it exactly right. Unknowingly, your body has turned on a sensor that it doesn't use in everyday life. You know, it doesn't do it consciously. It's like, as soon as you step in there, you know, it activates. This unknown sensor is looking for something. It's like a radar, and you're exactly right. And it's going to pick up on things. And when, you know, and it probably after an experience like that, it's running pretty hot. It's running pretty high. And when you get home, yeah, you're probably tuned into that shit. This stuff is probably happening all around us all the time. We just don't have the eyes and ears to see and hear it, you know?
Oh yeah. I think it's total. And I agree. I agree with that. But I also think, like, for me, I don't want it to happen all the time. I'm not someone that wants to,
I'm with you,
you know, have that switch flipped on all the time. Like, no. I gotta live my life. Hell, like during, you know, in New York City during lockdown, when you're in an apartment and you can't go engage with the city, hell no, I would not have wanted to be tuned in during that time. Like, right. I was actively saying no, thank you. Like, do not want this. But yeah, I think you do have to, and shit. Like, people are constantly like, oh, only old houses are haunted, or there was a tragedy here, so this is haunted. But this house is brand new. Nothing happened here. Yeah, and yeah. Like, that's probably still haunted if you really want to poke around enough, because people have died everywhere, and who knows what the laws of physics or of the paranormal, whatever they may be. Some people, you know, I don't think location in history necessarily means the end all be all as far as that goes.
Well, and going back to like somebody like John Keel, I bet his radar was just tuned and turned on all the time. So much crazy stuff happened to and around him. It's, you know, it's incredible to think about.
What is it about the house you grew up in, Aaron, that you're like, well, I'm not saying it was haunted, but there was something going on there.
So it's really, it's part of research that I'm doing now. So I'm uncovering a lot of things now. I'm the youngest of five kids. I was raised Catholic. I'm not really Catholic now. I'm not observant. I say I'm culturally Catholic. Mm-hmm. Insofar as, you know, hey, I like Easter dinners and Christmas and that kind of thing. But my brother, when he was younger, getting the story out of him is a little bit difficult, but he actively said that he tried to bring something in. He was an angry teenager. Mm. We found some of this out later. In fact, some of this I only found out about last year. And everyone in my family was experiencing things, but not talking about it. And wow. Some of these things are only coming to light. Like I said, started about a year ago, but only coming to light pretty recently. And I had an experience as a little kid where I saw something in my bedroom, and I didn't know what it was. I couldn't process what it was. I was a little kid, about like 6 years old, but I do have that image burned in my brain. Memory is unreliable, right? Like we create stories and then we reinforce them and keep adding layers to them. However, the fact that everyone in my family having different things happening and not talking about it until years later, it is kind of putting me on this new path, because my journey, if you will, in the paranormal has never really been about me. It's been about talking to other people. And now I'm kind of shifting gears where I'm like, okay, I guess I got to look into my own story. This is kind of weird.
That's Can wild. You describe to the best of your ability, if you're willing, what it was you saw? If you drew a picture of it, what would it look like?
Yeah, it was, and again, six-year-old mind. However, mm-hmm. it was a very tall figure. It was also, it was shadowy, but not the same as that figure that I saw later at Eastern State Penitentiary. Very tall. The thing that sticks out a lot is the face. It was somehow both indescribable or somewhat indefinable and yet very clear. And that doesn't quite make sense, but it almost looks like a Halloween mask, like a classic, like monster Halloween mask. And something that certainly we didn't have in the house, but just like stood there in, I was on the bottom bunk that I shared with one of my brothers. Well, I didn't share the bottom bunk. We shared a bunk bed.
Right.
And looking across and sort of seeing part of this thing cut off by the top part of the bunk and poking my head through enough to see how tall it was, like that it reached the top of the door frame. But this, the face is really kind of what's burned into me. And I don't know what it was, Michael. And I'm not saying
sure.
it was X, Y, Z, because I don't go to the whole demon thing.
Right.
I think that's way too easy of a scapegoat, but it was something really freaking weird.
But when you say Halloween, like, are we talking Bela Lugosi, deep set eyes, ghoulish face? Or are we talking a pumpkin head or skeleton head?
Well, do you remember the Mad Balls from the 80s?
Yes.
Of course I fucking do. It wasn't that. Are you kidding me?
It wasn't that.
I think about Mad Balls at least twice a week, Aaron.
I got one in my hand right now. I literally just grabbed my Mad Ball. My kid has one. I love those things.
Oh, have they come back?
Yeah, they're back.
Wow. All right.
Mad Balls are back. Great.
This one I'm looking at is like yellow, skullish. His brains are sort of coming out. He's got fiery red eyes and his teeth are protruding and just looks sort of like ghoulish.
Yeah, I always think of the Mummy Mad Ball. The Mummy Mad Ball is the first one I think of. But go on, Aaron. We can talk about Mad Ball but
I mean, we could, and I would certainly go down this path with you. But no, it was sort of like a classic devil mask, and yet not like hooked nose. It seemed like a reddish face.
Bryce,
it was there was like sort of hair on its head. And yet it wasn't like the contours of the face were so like deeply set lines. And again, the thing is that there's both definition to it and not, almost like it's
a paradox,
almost like phasing a little bit, like it's, you know, not entirely crisp and clear. And yet you get a sense of it burned into you.
Wow.
Bryce, this sounds like the red devil you saw in your window that we discussed in the very first episode.
I mean, it's hitting a few parallels there. I mean, I don't know if you've ever heard me talk about when I was six, I had a similar situation. It was something sort of came across. I woke up instantaneously from my lower bunk bed at around in the middle of the night. And I see some sort of reddish glowing, what I can only describe as like the classic devil mask, come to my window and then slowly turn its head and peer into my soul with its like burning yellow eyes. And I described it as, what was that tuna, that canned ham?
The Underwood canned ham devil.
Underwood canned ham devil. And
which
yeah,
is very creepy.
So fucking creepy. That man,
we made a t-shirt about this. That's
we made a t-shirt.
How...
Go check it out on the on the on the merch. Get your High Strangeness Bryce's Devil t-shirt. But isn't that so crazy? I mean, all of us here have had experiences when we were younger, and here we are pursuing this. It's insane to think about. It's like it grabs a hold of you and it takes you on this path. And you know, for better or for worse, here we are, you know?
Well, and again, like, so it's weird and, you know, it kind of goes back to the question of like, are we actually seeing these things? Are we potentially seeing something else that's plucking an image out of our,
yes,
our unconscious minds and presenting itself in that way? But again, like, I didn't include this as part of the origin story. You know, I didn't include this in sort of my backstory. The first time I spoke about this publicly, I think, was only about 2 weeks ago. I was doing my first event back in the world. It was a paranormal event. And, you know, I was doing a talk about, it was a little bit about paranormal caught on camera, but also about how our ideas of ghosts have evolved throughout century and throughout storytelling and everything. Mm-hmm. And it was a woman in the audience who just asked me this question. And for whatever reason, I was like, okay, I'll start talking about this. Cause you know, this is sort of something that I'm researching currently down to trying to get into the research, the background of the house. Cause it's still there. We no longer have anything to do with it, but yeah. So this wasn't part of my background. This wasn't part of the thing that I would talk about as far as why I would get into the paranormal.
Right.
And yet, I guess maybe it was.
Incredible. Is your brother pretty open about talking to you guys and your family about what he was experiencing and what and how he brought in whatever he brought in?
So the unfortunate fact is that I'm lucky that all my family is still with me. However, I will say that that brother, he was really angry as a child and he kind of got caught up with substance abuse at that time. Mm. And that unfortunately is a struggle that many years later he continues to have. Oh, so man, when you talk to him about these things, he will deny. Sometimes he'll open up a little bit and he did say, again, that was about a year ago, I just happened to catch him at a time where he started talking about him actively trying to bring something in. He said there was almost like this electric blue light or whatever that was occurring in his room right around the time that this happened. And he did tell me at one point, and this is the part that freaks me out, the part that I'm struggling with, is that he says it's still around him and he almost likes having it around him. But I think there's a whole other discussion about people, you know, either addictions, mental health, and phenomena, whether they're vulnerable to it, whether it manipulates people. I'm not saying that's the root cause of these mm-hmm. issues, but it does seem to be a lot of parallels with these things.
Wow. And where the literal and the metaphorical demon begins and ends. Oh, yeah. And if we're going to go as far as saying like, hey, you know, maybe collectively we can create these tulpas, then I think it's possible, if not likely, that some of our own personal demons can manifest themselves in a physical way or a literal way that
psychic
we're dealing
potentiality.
With.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's well, a real thing.
I hope your brother works it out. I hope you get to the bottom of what's going on there. It's fascinating. I mean, you know, we'll be very interested to hear what you learn. But we have to move on to segue to a game. How
Let's
do I segue to a game? Let's play a game.
Smooth segue. Nice.
But that's
other news.
No, but this is like really fascinating. It's tough. And I think like it sounds, here's what I'd say. It sounds like you're doing really thoughtful and sensitive work into figuring all of this stuff out, you know, when it comes to your past and what's going on currently with all of this phenomenon. So we can't wait to learn more.
Yeah, I appreciate. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. like I said, I don't really normally talk about it, but I also am at that point. I don't know. Maybe it's just getting older where you're like, well, you know, talking is a good thing, right? So yeah, maybe opening up about it a little bit more is actually a healthy thing. So
100%. This is what, honestly, you know, as much as we embrace sophomoric humor on the show, like, you know, we've always said one of the goals here is to get rid of the stigma of talking about experiences with this phenomena, and then with the phenomena or phenomenon, and then also, you know, when it comes to mental health shit, being like, let's talk about it, like, fuck it, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, because it often seems so intermingled. So yeah, we keep us posted on what you're learning. All right, let's get into Aaron, if you've listened to the show, you know that we play a game with our guests. I'm going to go down a list of phenomena, rapid fire style. If you're open to it, you're going to say believe it. If you're not open to it, you're going to say bullshit. If you're somewhere in between, you got to say one or the other. And we can always circle back on something that you want to revisit. This is a game.
I know you do this game. Oh, you kill me on this game.
All right. It'll be fun.
Just please, God, tell me you know what a skunk ape is.
Bryce.
I grew up in Florida. Skunk ape is like our national animal.
You're ready for this game. Good. So am I.
All right. That's because Bryce has been put on temporary leave as a skunk ape salesman after last week's episode. Okay. This is a game that we love to call Bullshit
or Believe It.
All right. Aaron Sagers, on your mark, get set, ghosts.
Believe it?
UFOs.
Believe it.
Bigfoot.
Believe it.
ESP.
Believe it-ish.
Shadow people.
Believe it.
Unicorns.
Bullshit.
Alien abductions.
Believe it.
Yeti.
Believe it.
Mothman.
Believe it.
Out of body experiences.
Believe it.
Tarot cards.
I believe tarot cards exist, yes.
demonically possessed dolls.
Believe it sometimes.
The healing power of crystals.
Bullshit.
An alien spacecraft crashed at Roswell.
Oh, believe it.
Loch Ness Monster.
Believe it once existed.
Atlantis.
Ooh, that's a tough one. Bullshit.
Haunted houses.
Believe it.
Skunk ape.
Believe it.
The Jersey Devil.
Believe it.
The biblical devil.
Bullshit.
Caught Riley chuckling on that one. Speaking,
a little fun on that one.
Yeah. I give it a little more flair every time.
Traditional Satan.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Satan.
The Lord of Darkness. Speaking to the dead. Speaking to the dead is the next one.
Believe it.
Mermaids.
I'm going with believe it. Believe it.
The government is hiding the truth about Sasquatch.
Bullshit.
Past lives.
Believe it.
Life on other planets.
Believe it.
Life after death.
Believe a version of it.
Madballs.
Oh, believe it.
Yeah. So
all right. Well done. Well wow. Done, there's a couple. Like, really? You did great. As someone who was like, awesome. You know, I don't know about this.
I don't know about all of it. There's so many sure. asterisks of that are not. Added mentally to everything there.
Well, yeah. we have you on mermaids. Record now.
You said believe it. Bryce is a believer in mermaids. You're a believer sure. in mermaids. We got to. What about mermaids are you open to?
Well, I don't know. I mean, this is not a shameless promotion for the show, but there was the mermaid clip on Paranormal Caught on Camera, and it was probably just a woman in the water wearing a fin, but it looked like, I mean, the quote from the woman that saw it was like, "It's a motherfucking mermaid. I heard the stories, but I didn't believe it was true." And I said, how do we not have "It's a motherfucking mermaid, motherfucker" on t-shirts? Sorry yeah, yeah. for if that's hopefully not putting you in the explicit podcast
guys,
category.
We just got another one-star review. Right. Thank you very much.
I was told to prepare sophomoric vulgarity great. In the yes. interview prep. Yeah, so, but that, I don't know. I think that, why not? I mean, every culture seems to have a story about these human-animal hybrids, and mermaids are one that come up a lot. So I don't think it's all just manatee out there.
Yeah.
And what about this unicorn video that Bryce has shown us? It's supposed to be a video of a unicorn in Scotland.
Love that unicorn.
Oh, video. Right. Yeah, I saw that.
CGI or unicorn? You said bullshit to unicorns.
I did say bullshit to unicorns. And I feel like I'm just coming down hard on unicorns when, I don't know, they might be out there or might have been out there at one point. But I think that video is bullshit.
Great. Me too. Riley as well. Sorry, Bryce. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, it's time for this week's Story of High Strangeness with Aaron Sagers. Sorry, Bryce.
Tear rolling down my eye.
I know. So quiet.
I feel like, Bryce, you and I were on we're on our ways but to becoming besties, and then I ruined it. I ruined it.
You're fine. You guys are fine. You guys are going to get along great we'll be after all right. this. We'll be right back. Hey, everybody, it's time for this week's Story of High Strangeness. It's Wet Hot Alien Summer 2, Summer Abduction.
Yes,
Bryce,
it is.
It's your turn. What did you bring in for Aaron this week?
Well, he probably already knows about this next whatever it is I'm about to speak about. But if you've ever listened to our show before, then you know we always close with Michael.
Good night and go get regressed.
Nice. That's exactly right.
A but regression.
But what you may not know is how the idea of hypnotic regression became so popular amongst abductees. Well, tonight we're going to change that because I'm going to profile a legend in the game, a man by the name of Bud Hopkins, famously known for his interest in UFOs, aliens, the abduction phenomenon, and the often talked about idea of missing time. Oh, and he was a pretty relevant artist as well. Considered the father of the abduction movement. Michael, did you think this was just going to be about hypnotic regression?
Honestly, I thought it would be about an alien or UFO, but if you want to do a biography tonight, that's great, because there's nothing we'd love to hear more about during a wet, hot alien summer than a middle-aged man who coaxes women into telling him their secrets.
Listen, this is integral to wet, hot alien
it's
summer.
True.
Summer abduction. Okay?
Absolutely. Bud Hopkins comes up all
canon.
The time. He is a big
player.
We need
to know who he is.
Yes, this is true. The guys, you thought you were going to come for a sexy story. It might get sexy, but we're here for a history lesson. It's great. I love it. Go on.
Oh, my God. How dare you? Considered the father of the abduction movement, Elliot Bud Hopkins was born in 1931 and raised in Wheeling, West Virginia.
At 2 years old, Hopkins contracted polio, and it was during his long recovery process that he developed an interest in drawing and watercolors, an interest that eventually led him to graduating with a bachelor's degree in art history from Oberlin College in 1953. After Oberlin, Hopkins moved on to New York City, where his experimentation with collage technique and style as an abstract expressionist won him national acclaim. But we're not here to talk about Bud Hopkins, the incredible and talented painter and sculptor. No, no, no. We're here to talk about his interest in the UFO topic, an interest that really started when he was a child. You see, Hopkins experienced firsthand Orson Welles' 1938 radio play, The War of the Worlds, which both terrified and fascinated him, so much so that he felt the radio production had left psychic scars on him and his family. But it was really in August of 64 when Hopkins and two of his buddies reported experiencing a daytime sighting of an unidentified flying object that his interest blossomed into a full-blown fascination. All three of them saw a dark, silver, sexy, elliptical object making strange maneuvers off of Cape Cod in Truro, Massachusetts. He then reported it to the nearby Otis Air National Guard base, but when they didn't take his sighting seriously, he was annoyed, to say the least, and even suspected a possible government cover-up. It was then that Hopkins began reading everything he could on the UFO topic and started collecting stories of people who claimed to have experienced contact with alien beings. He even joined the now-defunct UFO research group NICAP, the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena. In 75, Hopkins was approached by a fellow named George Obarski, who purportedly witnessed alien figures stepping out of a spacecraft and taking soil samples at North Hudson Park in North Bergen, New Jersey. Hopkins, along with the director of New York State's Mutual UFO Network, investigated the incident, interviewing the witnesses and taking soil samples of their very own. Hopkins then wrote about the Obarski case, and the article appeared in the Village Voice in 1976, after which he began receiving regular letters from other UFO witnesses, including a few cases where he began to notice similar behavioral patterns of what would become known as missing time. These seemingly inexplicable gaps in abductees' memories, a theme Bud would write about extensively in his book, well, Missing Time. He also began to identify core emotional responses based on their experiences, fear, awe, or wonderment at alien technological abilities, affection toward their captors, anger, and helplessness. He believed aliens were either incapable of understanding the psychological effects of their encounters with humans, or that they were a callous, indifferent, amoral race bent solely upon gratifying their own scientific needs at whatever cost to us. Hopkins encouraged self-proclaimed abductees to discuss their experiences by holding a free monthly group therapy session, almost kind of like what we do. Attendees represented people from all walks of life who he described as veterans of trauma. They were, in his view, victims who experienced often intrusive and painful physical examinations by their alien abductors, whose memories, according to Hopkins, rarely emerged unaided, and whose stories were best told through hypnosis. Although Hopkins had no formal psychological training, he watched other professionals over an 8-year period and developed his own special brand of hypnotic regression techniques. In short, hypnotic regression is the process by which you enter a trance and recall material from deep inside that's normally not available to the conscious mind. He believed aliens were blocking or submerging memories in the people they abducted. Despite critics' warnings that practices such as the ones in which Hopkins engaged may cause serious psychological damage to the alleged abductees, Hopkins insisted that regressive hypnosis could unlock those experiences of his clients. By 1995, Hopkins had worked with hundreds of abductees. It was during these hypnosis sessions that Hopkins' belief in UFO abduction deepened. To him, the incredible similarities amongst abductees lent credibility to their stories. And there was also the physical proof, which came in the form of scoop marks or indentations in the skin, scars or cuts on the mouth, nose, ears, or genitals, or unexplained bruises that might clear up in a day. An abductee's claims of implants, interpreted as control or monitoring devices similar to those used by human scientists to track and tag animals in the wild. He also followed up on a lot of the accounts and found that whatever type of spacecraft was taking these individuals, they often left marks on the ground where they landed. And on rare occasions, his clients would show him photographs of the supposed aliens. He also noticed that his claimed abductees often observed unconventional objects in the sky, as well as a sense of being watched or observed, and the ever-creepy presence of hooded beings near the foot of their bed at night, causing a sense of paralysis or immobilization, often followed by impressions of flying or passing through closed windows or doors and walls, and a feeling of having been outside upon awakening, most especially a sense of missing or lost time. Hopkins always had a sense that what he was doing was important. He insisted, despite questions from other researchers and skeptics, that his findings were solidly based in evidence that cumulatively was overwhelming. Despite Hopkins' oft-repeated assertion of powerful evidence for alien abduction, critics plagued his career with calls for tangible proof, which were rarely, if ever, forthcoming. DNA from hybrid babies, proof of implants that were alluded to but never recovered, and even the photographs and videotapes of spacecrafts and or aliens were, unconvincing to those not willing to see. Critics included his former wife, Carol Rainey, who expressed concern that UFO researchers were not held to scholastic, scientific, or ethical standards. They divorced shortly after. Others questioned the likelihood that alien abductors could actually float people through solid walls, and if they could, how these people could escape detection, particularly in urban settings where there would potentially be millions of people around to witness the event. Hopkins responded by suggesting that aliens could make themselves and their abductees invisible. The lack of physical evidence and implausibility of the alien abduction scenarios led some critics, including Carl Sagan, to question whether these memories are the product of an internal rather than external experience, and cautioned that media coverage might inadvertently be influencing alleged victim stories. And I suppose it's hard to argue with that logic. The much-covered Betty and Barney Hill case exposed millions to the idea of alien abduction. And Whitley Strieber's seminal book, Communion, in 1987, introduced us to the classic gray aliens that we so often think of today. It topped the New York Times bestseller list, as did Hopkins' own book, Intruders, The Incredible Visitation at Copley Woods, which prompted stories of strange alien abductions. Abductees were literally coming out of the woodwork. Even Hopkins admitted that media attention had a way of contaminating the pool of subjects, but he felt he was able to cull the delusional stories from those he believed to be real. You see, for him, the repetition of certain experiences by abductees lent credibility to their stories. For Hopkins, these accounts were not fantasy, but a very real phenomenon that people were experiencing. But Hopkins even introduced legendary Harvard psychiatrist Dr. John E. Mack to the subject and convinced him he ought to look into the strange abduction phenomenon, which Mack did, sending him on a rabbit hole journey that would permanently alter the course of his life and career, stating in regards to people's abduction experiences, quote, "I take them seriously. I don't have a way to account for them. I would never say, yes, there are aliens taking people, but I would say there is a compelling, powerful phenomenon here that I can't account for in any way. It's mysterious, yet I can't know what it is, but it seems to me that it invites a deeper, further inquiry," end quote. Hopkins may have certainly quieted some of his critics when he began to investigate and research an abduction case that was alleged to have occurred in late 1989 near the Brooklyn Bridge in New York City with dozens of witnesses, including two police officers and a prominent member of the United Nations, who all observed the abduction taking place. He talked about it in his book, Witnessed, The True Story of the Brooklyn Bridge UFO Abductions. Bud's fascination with the subject of UFOs, aliens, and abductions couldn't help but to influence his later artistic years. Hopkins turned to large quasi-architectural sculptures that seemed to spring from primordial myths. In 1985, reviewing one such piece, the Temple of Apollo with Guardian 45, it was part house of worship, part archaeological ruin, part sacrificial altar, Michael Brenson wrote in the New York Times. Quote, "If the work is about sacrifice and violence, it is also about ecstasy and illumination. In the course of trying to reestablish the broadest meaning of the abstract geometry that has fascinated so many 20th century artists, Hopkins makes us consider that ritual, worship, cruelty, and superstition have always been inseparable. On August 21st, 2011, Hopkins died from complications of cancer. And at the time of his death, he was in a relationship with renowned journalist Leslie Keen, one of the three prominent journalists to break the now hot UFO subject wide open in a December 2017 article entitled Glowing Auras and Black Money, the Pentagon's Mysterious UFO Program. And here we are today. To learn more about Harvard psychiatrist Dr. John E. Mack and his research into the abduction phenomenon, you can go back and check out episode 16 of the Bigfoot Collectors Club with special guest Maria Thayer. And if you're interested in Bud Hopkins' seminal research into the abduction of Linda Napolitano, which took place in front of multiple witnesses in New York City, and I know you are, check out BCC 111, The Brooklyn Bridge Abduction with Henry Zebrowski. And that's it.
Yeah, and I would add to that, check out BCC episode 32 with Bree Blair, where we talk about the Copley Woods abduction.
Copley Woods abduction,
of Debra Jordan Cowbell. Yeah. Bud Hopkins, like, you know, you got to give it up to this guy, Bryce. Like, he listened. He's one of the guys who listened, right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that he, I guess I wasn't aware, or maybe I forgot that he was directly a hypnotherapist. Like, he did the hypno regressions himself, not only being a journalist getting into this stuff like Aaron is, but he actually conducted some of these sessions.
Yeah. I mean, and you know, he really set the groundwork for what we consider when somebody has, you know, a paranormal trauma to go and get regressed. He really laid that framework. And even John E. Mack, who was a Harvard psychiatrist, picked up on some of that brain work, and they would share notes back and forth. So, you know, he was very knowledgeable and very apt at what he was doing in those regression sessions. It came with a lot of critique, and it still does, but I think there's some pretty poignant stuff to be found in there.
Aaron, what do you think? As a journalist, would you are you gonna get into some of this regressive therapy? Why not try it out?
It's not really my particular style of conducting research or interviews. I think Hopkins is a compelling character because I think there's a lot of like, I believe he believed what he was doing. I believe he believed he was helping people, and maybe he was helping some people, but I also see merit in the criticisms that he was also sort of leading the witness or giving validity to experiences that may have been sleep paralysis or may have been otherwise explainable. But I agree.
Or like, representative of other trauma that, you know what I mean? That might be masking other trauma, which I sometimes
wonder about. Absolutely.
And so, yeah, I think that he was an interesting cat. Like he opened up this world of study quite a bit and most certainly contributed to the community. But I wouldn't say that everything that he did was spot on. I think there was a lot of flaws in his perception.
You know what I love about this story is one that it's mine, but what's so funny about this paranormal and we were talking about it earlier is how it sort of changes and morphs along with you. Here, so much of his critique was, how could this happen? There's no witnesses. How are they going to float someone through a wall? And then, boom, later in his career, he's hit with the Linda Napolitano case where people did observe a craft using a beam floating a woman through a wall, which two police officers saw. It's almost like it was placed in his lap. And it's just so apropos, so strange.
That is one of the wildest abduction cases, yes.
It's almost like there's this element of destiny to it.
Yes, we are all on a path and we will get there. And maybe something has put us on this path.
And that trickster phenomena being like, hey, follow me down this road, see where it gets you. Mm-hmm. So fascinating. Also, didn't know that his wife, or now, you know, eventually ex-wife, was like, I can't deal with this anymore.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I mean, I'm pretty sure we can all understand that, you know, but yeah.
This is why I'm not married yet. yeah, exactly. I'm actually really glad. I have a fond place in my heart for Bud Hopkins. He's involved in two of my favorite cases. And also, I love that we're going to name this episode Bud Hopkins with Aaron Sagers. That's also what I'm excited about.
Yes, I love it.
I'm excited about that. I mean, just one other thing about, if I may, about Bud Hopkins is the criticism that he was, by being involved in these cases, by writing these books, or the Betty and Barney Hill movie, that it's influencing the public. Yes, to some degree, that is true. But maybe it's also bringing things up for people,
right?
Or making it okay for them to talk about it, or making it more okay. So, you know, that's kind of the paranormal pop culture element of, like, talking about these things, it being represented in popular culture does influence belief, but it also influences awareness and your own kind of internal experience, I guess, and your willingness to talk about it openly. So it's not an all bad thing.
Well, and, you know, speaking of numbers, you guys might find this interesting, but in 1991, Bud Hopkins partnered with a guy named David Jacobs, who was a history professor at Temple University, and John Mack, to design a Roper poll to find out just how many of the nearly 6,000 respondents surveyed had experienced what the three believed to be symptoms indicative of alien abductions. If generalized to the population at large, the survey results indicated that several million Americans are regularly affected by alien abductions, as much as an average of 340 Americans could be abducted daily. I mean, the numbers are pretty staggering when you look at it like that.
That's
a lot.
Yeah. Bud Hopkins, maybe he was high. That is wild. I mean, his name is Bud. Am I right, everybody?
Did you guys ever see the TV movie Intruders?
Yes. Rice, Bree Blair, a guest on our show, played Debbie Jordan Cobble's sister as a little girl.
Yes, this is a story basically about aliens taken aboard spaceships and people being medically examined, and it portrays Johnny Mack and Bud Hopkins. We have to watch this movie for our movie club.
I love, Bryce, when you realize I put a lot of thought into this podcast 2 years after the fact.
I know you do, man. You're the like, man,
dude. I've been designing this from day one. Okay, I've been thinking about it from every angle. I love it. Well done. Let's all celebrate Bud Hopkins in his own special way. We would not have. I guarantee you, we wouldn't have Fox Mulder without Bud Hopkins. That's for sure. Aaron Sagers, we don't know where to find Bud Hopkins on the other side, but where can people find you and your work?
I appreciate you guys having me on, and people can reach out to me through the typical social media channels, Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Aaron Sagers, and on Facebook at Aaron Sagers page. You can check out, I have a little podcast I work on called Nightmarica that is both true crime and paranormal. And a lot of times it's true crime stories that have a paranormal element to it. And Paranormal Caught on Camera, I'm still doing that. And that's airing on Discovery Plus and on Travel Channel. And hell, I also have like a little Patreon thing that I do where it's paranormal, it's tiki cocktails, it's me talking about traveling, and it's just patreon.com/Aaron Sagers.
I love travel. Aaron, I love tiki cocktails, and I love Patreon. Have us on.
The podcast is Nightmarica, and
I'm subscribing right now. That sounds right up my alley.
Thank you. It's you guys are very good about keeping up with your podcast, and I sometimes get caught up with real life stuff, and I'm a little bit slow to update, but it always happens sooner or later. So,
and you know what? A fun surprise when it shows up in your favorite podcast app. Am I right?
Yes. Exactly. Awesome. Wherever you download your preferred podcasts.
Yes. And speaking of following podcasts, follow us at Bigfoot Collectors Club on Instagram and at Bigfoot Pod on Twitter. I'm at Mick Mills on both of those platforms, mostly active on Instagram. Bryce, where can people find you and what do you have to plug?
Yeah, you can find me on Instagram as well at Mr. Bryce Johnson and on Twitter at Bryce O. Johnson. Love to see you there. Love to have a dialogue.
Fantastic. Riley?
Hey. I'm on Instagram as at Peace Drone. That's all you need to know for now about me.
Great.
Fantastic. Yeah. Are you playing any Spindrift? Going to start playing some shows?
Oh, my God. Actually, no. Oh, I have
yeah,
hilarious.
You got some Spindrift stuff going on, don't you?
I'm playing on this will have already happened, but we're playing on Good Morning San Diego this weekend.
Oh, shit.
Lord. With Ron Burgundy?
Ron Burgundy.
Will he be there?
It's going to be so hard. It's going to take every bit of my self-control to not make Anchorman jokes. But I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to do it. But we're doing that, and we're playing the Showbox down in San Diego. But that already happened. But it's our first show back,
that's
so that's really exciting.
You'll be playing more shows. Where can people is there an email list or a website they can go to find out where Spindrift will be playing next?
AlternativeTentacles.com is Fantastic. Our label. They have all our info. You can pre-order the album that I promise will come out someday. It's out of my hands. I don't know why it's taking so long at this point.
You know what? Don't worry about it. We all love you. And congratulations for playing some live shows again. That's huge. Aaron Sagers, thank you so much for being a guest on our show. Everybody go follow his work. Obviously, super into this field and knowledgeable and enlightening on all of these subjects. Until next week, we say goodnight.
And go get regressed.
And you know what, Boxers 30? Fuck you.
Oh, wow. It's all. No, it's not on. It's
not that cool, here.
Stop playing.
Bigfoot Collectors Club is produced by Riley Bray. Our theme song is Come Alone by Sun Eaters, courtesy of Lotus Pool Records. If you like the show, please rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. It really helps get the podcast to more listeners. To support the show, check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/Bigfoot Collectors Club and unlock multiple reward episodes every month.
Hey guys, Heather Ashley here, host of the Big Mad True Crime Podcast. If you're looking for a true crime podcast with all of the details and none of the small talk, you have found your people. Each week, we dive deep into a new case and learn everything there is to know, from getting to know the victim and the impact their case has had on those around them, to the investigation into what happened to them and who is or might be responsible, and if the bad guy looks like he might drink whiskey by a dumpster or has the social skills of an ogre, we say it because we were all thinking it anyway. As the name suggests, we get big mad over true crime, and I would love to have you join our incredible community of listeners with big hearts and zero time for small talk. Subscribe to Big Mad True Crime anywhere you listen to podcasts and listen to new episodes every single Monday.
Hey, this is Eric Molinsky, host of the podcast Imaginary Worlds. Each episode, I explore different sci-fi fantasy genres, talking with filmmakers, novelists, game designers, cosplayers, comic book artists, and anyone who works in the field of make-believe. I also look at the fan experience, asking, why do we suspend our disbelief? You can subscribe to Imaginary Worlds wherever you get your podcasts.